Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're doing our news roundup, Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining news that you missed this week or want a little more color on. So we're going to go through the epic sat sale for 33 Bitcoin for via BTC, Jack Dorsey's 3-nanometer Bitcoin mining chip, and then an interesting article from TSMC, among other things. If you missed the Samurai wallet news or also the conversation with Matt Corallo and Marty Bent about Bitcoin mining decentralization, go check out our live stream that we did yesterday. It's in today's show notes. We talk about both those things. We don't dwell on them too long in today's podcast because of that, but those were certainly very large headlines from this week. Okay, we're going to jump right into the conversation after a few words from our sponsors, Forman Mining, Master Your Mining. Hear from them first, and then CleanSpark, America's Bitcoin miner. You'll hear from them a little bit later in today's show. Okay, on to the episode.
Hey listeners, let's talk about revolutionizing your mining operation with Forman. This isn't your average management tool. It's an all-in-one solution for reducing costs and significantly boosting your revenue. Forman brings a cutting-edge dashboard to your fingertips, empowering you with automated energy strategies. This means not only curtailing around real-time prices, but also strategically enhancing your profit margins through demand response. It's about leveraging energy efficiency to its fullest potential. With Forman, you get a system that scales with your business, inventory management for assets, infrastructure integration, and business intelligence. Forman elevates the cash flow and production of your entire operation. To see how Forman can redefine your mining operation standards, visit Forman.mn. With Forman, you're not just managing a mining operation, you're setting a new standard in the industry.
Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Mining Pod. Matt Kimmel is off today. He abandoned us. Maybe we'll see him next week. Well, we will, because we'll be in Austin for Bitcoin Plus Plus. So Charlie, Matt, and I will do our first in-person podcast together. Matt and I have done an in-person podcast together. I don't think, Charlie, you and I have done one.
No, I don't think all the boys have been in the same room ever. So looking forward to our inaugural Matt, Charlie, Will IRL podcast. So see you, the Mining Pod, Austin, Texas edition.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, the only thing in the way for me right now to get down to Austin is I paid for a Bitcoin Plus Plus ticket with Bitcoin, and I don't think the transaction has landed on chain yet. So hopefully that happens by this time next week if fee pressure can go down. Maybe I'll have to use like Slipstream or something to pay for it. But
Depending on if it's RBF enabled, we could probably do our first Mining Pod RBF, official corporate RBF thing. So, but I mean, but that's a great transition because, you know, by when this goes out on Friday, that'll be about a week since the halving. And recording this on Thursday, and right now fees are quieter than what I anticipated last Mining Pod. So
they
yeah,
really what are. Was that? Yeah, let's take a look at this data from Hashrate Index. Our friends over at Luxor and Hashrate Index put this together. This gives you an indicator for how much you can make mining Bitcoin. We call this hash price. It takes into like a lot of different variables, but it spits out how much Bitcoin you can mine with a certain amount of hash rate per day. And we are at an all-time low, Charlie, an all-time low. I think it's around like $60 per petahash per day. Not great, but very much so expected. Halving implies we halved all our revenue. And that took a little bit to occur because we had all the runes revenue where we actually shot up towards like $110, $120 per petahash. But we're now in post-halving slump. Rune pressure has seemed to unwind. I think the chain is still a little clogged in terms of like fee pressure, but it's definitely coming down. What are your thoughts as both a Bitcoin miner exposed to hash price and then as a runes observer?
Yeah, I was very happy to see fees spike. I know people who are trying to degen on runes right after the halving got hosed on the fees. There's a lot of money spent out the gate, but it's quieted down now. Please degens start ruining again more. This is what we always anticipate after halving is profitability goes to previously unseen lows, and we're seeing that now. I believe, is this maybe an all-time low for hash price? And
I believe it is.
Yeah, all-time low. I think that's actually probably not as big of a story as it should be. So my minds are sweating right now. I will say we will have to see. I mean, if you look at Matt Kimmel, who's not here, has a really good Dune dashboard, which shows runes transactions as a percentage of overall Bitcoin transactions. And runes, as of this morning, are still over half of Bitcoin transactions. This is actually really just the reality that Bitcoin itself is not that demanded right now. The decline in hash price is really, I would say, probably because people aren't sending enough financial Bitcoin transactions.
Bitcoin's over. It's just full
it's
of
over. It's
funky
dead.
JPEGs.
That was like the narrative this week. I mean, if you are tuning in this podcast and you're just hearing for the first time, we did a stream on Blockspace, what we call Blockspace Bytes, Wednesday afternoon, where we kind of recap live a lot of the stuff that was hitting the news cycle, in particular the Department of Justice hitting the Samurai deal. But we can come back to that. I'll let you take on the Bitcoin mining difficulty adjustment topic, Will.
Okay, no, we'll get to the Samurai stuff in a second, but I do want to show this chart from our friends, or this graphic, I should say, from our friends over at the Miner Mag, showing that this was the first positive difficulty adjustment, meaning difficulty got harder after a halving. So I look at the first, second, third, fourth Bitcoin halvenings, and this is the first one where it went up about 2% post-halving. And why did that happen? Well, I think part of it is like there was sort of like the dates were off a little bit, where the difficulty adjustment came a few days after the halving. And so we had like a lot of that positive momentum from the larger Coinbase reward pre-halving carry into this difficulty adjustment. I would expect the next difficulty adjustment to be negative, especially as we see what we just talked about, hash price continue to be at all-time lows. But I did want to bring this up because it's an interesting data point to show like how strong Bitcoin price is right now and how strong the on-chain marketplace is for Bitcoin. The fact that we have a positive difficulty adjustment right after a Bitcoin halving. Never happened before.
Yeah, I think we had the longest string of blocks where the fees surpassed the block subsidy. I think we had, I don't know if they're all consecutive, but we had like one of the most notable runs of about 200 blocks on Saturday and Sunday, where we had fees just consistently over the base block subsidy. That's very significant. Even if that's all runes ever are, which I think there's way more to the story, to me, that's very successful. That did about a third of all of the fees of ordinals combined from the past year, and about half of all the fees generated from BRC20 in the past year, in US dollar denominated terms. So that's a very interesting observation that in a single weekend, we saw runes already get on the board for like significant fee revenue to miners.
A lot of people are like FUDing runes right now in the sense that like it was an overhyped event, but like that's a pretty strong metric to say it was like somewhat successful.
Yeah.
Like maybe successful. It's not
successful as, from a fee generation standpoint. We are talking our side of the book here. I have not been very active on the runes metric, on the runes like minting or trading, but I would like to closely monitor, and you might see us on Bitcoin season 2 where we'll take a look at like, are the runes degens actually making money? Are they up or down? That'd be a very good, interesting question to ask, because definitely the miners are up on fees from the runes. So that's halfway there.
And a little more plug there, Bitcoin season 2, Charlie does 2 shows per week. One's a live stream, one's a podcast. We talk with all people involved in Bitcoin season 2, whether that be subscribers, L2s, Bitcoin miners, etc. So a little more in-depth technical discussions that we sometimes bleed into on this show. Okay, so we have a lot more to get into, including an EpicSat sale, some stuff on TSMC and chip production in the US, and Jack Dorsey's Block announcing its new chip. But before we get into that, we want to bring up 2 things very quickly. 1, the case with Samurai, and 2, the podcast with Marty Bent and Matt Corallo. Both of those topics we actually did a live stream about yesterday, so we would push people there. We'll include a link in the show notes. This week, frankly, just had too much Bitcoin content, and we want to make sure that we stick on mining topics here They're both, I'd say, either mining directly or mining adjacent, but we already have the conversation. So go check out those live streams with Samurai. Obviously, if you're paying attention to Bitcoin, you know about this, but if not, Samurai is a Bitcoin mixing service and wallet, and they were charged and arrested, the co-founders of Samurai, for operating a quote-unquote money laundering scheme. So that news came out yesterday, did a live stream on it. We've had Samurai on the podcast before. So yeah, our hearts go out to their families who are now dealing with this litigation and going to deal with these issues. We're going to stay up to date with that story on the podcast and the newsletter. I think it's a pretty pivotal moment for Bitcoin and privacy. So we'll definitely keep up to date with it. Now for the Matt Carello part, again, it's on this live stream. Go check it out. Also go watch the Marty Bent episode with him. They talk about pool decentralization. Is Bitcoin in a weak spot right now historically because of what Antpool and friends are quote unquote doing? We give a lot of thoughts on that on the live stream as well. So we won't belabor it on today's show, but go check out Marty and the live stream.
In the competitive world of Bitcoin mining, one name stands out: CleanSpark, America's Bitcoin miner. At CleanSpark, efficiency isn't just a goal, it's our standard. Our sophisticated facilities are built and led by expert teams who care about Bitcoin and the communities we work in. Scale, we've mastered it. Our large-scale operations have set us apart in the industry as examples of community-oriented building. Our track record speaks for itself. We navigate the complexities of the new economy with precision and with skill, continuously achieving operational milestones. Curious about how we do it? We invite you to discover the story behind CleanSpark's success at cleanspark.com.
Okay, let's take a look at this article from our friends over at the Miner Mag. Quote, Via BTC sells fourth halving epic sat for 33.3 BTC.
Yeah, so this is crazy. I mean, a lot of us, you know, we're speculating what's the actual full take going to be. What's the auction going to go to? Via sold the epic sat. That's the first sat after the halving. Via BTC got that block, so they have the sat, and that sat sold at auction for 33.3 Bitcoin, or about $2.1 million. So, very large price point, very exciting, and we finally got to actually see what one of these things is actually worth. You know, it's notable because like the auction only lasted like 24 hours or so, maybe 48 hours, and it was auctioned off on CoinEx, which is a exchange which doesn't allow for Americans to participate. Now, it is the CEO, I understand, of Via, who also owns CoinEx. So that might be why it was there. But I wonder if like the actual auction mechanics perhaps neutered the overall sale price. A lot of us were speculating it would go higher. My big takeaway, and I'm going to talk about this later, probably in the newsletter, which comes out when this podcast drops, is that if we actually take the all-in take, the all-in revenue to Via BTC for this block, and we take the total fees, which were 37.6 Bitcoin, plus the subsidy, which is 3.125 Bitcoin, and we add the revenue from the Epic Sat sale, 33.3 Bitcoin, we get over 80 Bitcoin for all-in for this one block, like block 840,000. I believe that makes this the highest revenue block in the history of Bitcoin in USD denominated terms, if we take out a couple of the fat finger events, which have historically been returned to the transaction issuer. So that puts this block right, like, well, I think in the first place for like biggest block ever, not for data, but for overall fees to the like revenue to the block producer. Huge.
This is great for Bitcoin miners. Like, this is an indication of what the future looks like for on-chain transactions, whether you like them or not. This is bullish in terms of network security. The fact that we can move to a world where there is transaction fees and the Coinbase subsidy disappears. So a long debated topic. We've done this on the show many times, but it can Bitcoin move from a Coinbase subsidy world to a transaction fee world? And, you know, I think like these moments They're rare right now, but in the future, I think it's an indicator that yes, people want to build on Bitcoin. Bitcoin's brand is really strong. The liquidity is there and builders will try to build there. And this is just, I think, one data point. Now, there is strong arguments against this. Even saw a few on Twitter this morning talking about what a shame it was that this Epic Sat sold for 33 Bitcoin. It is a Satoshi. So in the eyes of Bitcoin, a Satoshi is one Satoshi. In the eyes of Bitcoin, it's really UTXO, right? It's not even a Satoshi. It's just part of a Bitcoin. It's a UTXO. So there's that. But of course, there's this whole world outside of Bitcoin, the natural world we live in, and we can define things how we want. Now, is that good or bad that we're defining it in a certain way, or some people are? I guess that remains to be seen. Arguably, this is bad for Bitcoin's fungibility or a Satoshi's or a UTXO's fungibility, meaning the ability to price one Bitcoin against one Bitcoin. If you have one Bitcoin with an Epic Sat in it, well, it's worth more than one Bitcoin, even though Bitcoin sees it as one Bitcoin. And fungibility is a very important aspect of money. So I think those questions are coming up. I don't expect those ever to be a huge problem with Bitcoin because we have four Epic Sats so far and two are lost, right? So I just don't think this is going to be a huge deal. I think it'll be big to some collectors and that's about it. But for the most part, fungibility won't be an issue.
Yeah, I'll jump in here again and say I obviously am of the opinion that this particular phenomenon is not really that much of a risk and that I personally enjoy it. But I will say, Blockspace, we want to cover the business of what's happening on Bitcoin. And this represents material evolution in how Bitcoin works and is priced and how the revenue generated from the mining industry is evolving. So maybe you just absolutely hate to see this particular SAT sell for 33.3, I get that. But this is now a major economy. This is real revenue and a real market developing for this. We can argue till the cows come home whether it's going to be sustainable or not. But the reality is this is happening. And I think that's the most notable thing. We need to pay attention to this. This is, and if you're an analyst, this is one of the more interesting times because Bitcoin's looked kind of the same for a few years. Now it looks very different. A lot of interesting insights to be pulled right now.
Okay, let's go to our next story, which again, maybe arguably the story of the week, which Jack Dorsey's Block announced its development of a 3-nanometer Bitcoin mining chip and is aiming for its entire own Bitcoin mining system. For those who have been paying attention to Block, aka Square, the umbrella company for Spiral BTC, their Bitcoin company, or Cash App, Square, things like that, they've been looking and talking about building a Bitcoin mining ecosystem for quite a while. They've even open sourced a lot of their designs, and they claim they're going to continue open sourcing all of their products going forward. This 3-nanometer chip, I believe, was just designed in-house. And it's their fabless chip shop. So they're going to take this design and go to a foundry like a TSMC or a Samsung or an Intel and get placement for it there. Now, 3-nanometer, how does that stack up against the competition? I believe we're at 5-nanometer for most chips. Is that right, Charlie?
Yeah, 5-nanometer for a lot of SHA-256 chips.
So this is significant. This is the next step. We saw this with older chips. From 12 to 9 to 7, all the way down. Well, I don't even know if it was 12, but you see this progression. Why does this matter? Well, the thinner the wafer, the chip, the better you have the transferring of energy and heat. So you get this lower efficiency. That's a nice aspect of this. Bitcoin miners are obviously trying to drive down the joules per terahash, or essentially the energy usage, as low as possible. A lot of different Bitcoin miners are going for this right now. We saw an announcement from Bitdeer the other week in Dubai that they're also moving towards as low as possible joules per terahash. And for most people, that typically means that you need to get the wafer smaller or thinner. But that also means you need a better system, holistically. You need a better PSU, you need better parts inside, you need better hats on it as well. So I think the fact that they're going for the full system is very cool. I'll throw it to you, but I definitely want to give some takes on how I see this affecting the manufacturing market for ASICs.
Yeah, I'm actually really interested to hear your takes, Will. My takes are it's good to see. I feel like a broken record now. Anytime an American or non-Chinese like ASIC manufacturer or mining rig assembly company like does something outside China, I like to see it. This is very important from decentralization and just generally as like as silicon and silicon compute production becomes increasingly central to the global economy and U.S. national security, it's very important that we see this type of tech expand outside of a handful of companies in China. So TSMC is building a plant here. We'll actually talk about that here in a moment. Plug
for what's next.
Yeah, the little teaser. But yeah, I'm curious, Will, you've been reporting on chip efficiency improvements for years now. What's your take on this? Is this interesting? Is this notable? And what's your thoughts?
I think it's notable in that we have someone who's well capitalized entering the ASIC game. I think it's overblown in sense of like, what is this going to mean in the immediate future? This is years away from having an impact. A lot of what we see in the hardware game is that there's an 80-20 rule here, right? Where it's basically Bitmain and then everybody else. And of that 20%, it's MicroBT. Now, the actual numbers might be a little bit different, but I think for the most part, everyone knows it's either Bitmain or MicroBT, and then there's some others out there. Now, we have new incumbents, and that's great. We always want that, right? Because you can have like a turkey day anytime where, you know, it's Thanksgiving, and the turkey bird gets killed, and all of a sudden, the largest manufacturer is out of the game. That could certainly happen. And that's where one of these new manufacturers can kind of pop up and take market dominance. That's somewhat what happened with MicroBT, right? And that's their story where Bitmain had a lot of internal problems. There was a CEO dispute and MicroBT used that moment to develop itself and market itself and launch its product. And they claimed a sizable market share to where they're a competitor with Bitmain. And they kind of stomped down on all the other startups. Now with like Square and Auradine and all these other new guys, I think the biggest thing is like you have to have runway and you have to use that capital well. And then you have to start picking and choosing the miners you're going to work with and try to grow from there. The mining market is huge. The number I got from last year was that Bitmain sold about $3 billion in units, and that was just direct sales. So that's just like one revenue line they had. It's very hard to eat into that market. Think of all the different sites that are built out specifically for Bitmain gear. You know, this is down to like the rack level where it's like, how is my unit positioned on the rack to maintain airflow, to make sure that there's a hot and a cool aisle? How does this affect like all the networking gear that people have at sites? How does this affect the logistics? People go down to like the very, very details on how you're going to ship ASICs so you can have as much space as possible. And if you start swapping out units because you have a different form factor, that matters. And that's going to change people's logistics. So you can't just walk into the room and expect everyone to change the systems that have been developed for years. You really have to give someone a very, very good reason to do that. And it probably just can't be a political reason that Square Block is a US manufacturer. It needs to be cheaper. It needs to be more efficient. It needs to have something that's going to make your ops guy's life better. That's why I think it's a long-term game, right? You need to find a few miners that you can integrate with. We're seeing this with Auradine, right? Where they're strategically working with Marathon. And I don't know how many buy orders they've put in with Auradine, Marathon, but they've certainly invested in both their rounds. And I would assume that they're getting some of their units. And I think like their newest pick, immersion set also had some Auradine parts in it. So you have to probably work with one or two companies, get them to buy into it, and then start building out from there. I don't think you can have this mass market appeal. Otherwise, you know, very hard time doing sales. So that's my high level take on it. Exciting, but we're years away from this actually mattering.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Maybe you and I, Will, are a little bit skeptical and jaded because we've seen a lot of headlines which sound like a very good milestone. And then we've learned with heavy doses of reality, the actual challenges to rolling this out in a sustainable, proliferated way. So But shout out Jack Dorsey. I mean, that guy has been funding left and right. He funded the, you know, the he helped make move forward the COPA case, which did result in something objectively good to Bitcoin with the expulsion. And Ocean. Yeah, like he's writing checks everywhere. He's doing things which you might say are very Bitcoin aligned. And, you know, maybe out of the goodness of his heart, but certainly if you've made a few billion off Twitter, you know, you can go write checks and drive forward the Bitcoin ecosystem. So thank you, Jack Dorsey.
Yeah, I just want to see what's next. My Ocean play is still there. I said 10% network hash rate will be with Ocean by December 31st of this year. And I think with what's happening with Antpool and friends, that could be on the table. You know, some pressure for hash rate to move that way.
It's actually kind of interesting because we've talked about Ocean here, and I like to joke about Ocean. We got some tension on the whole spam filters thing, but remember what their core messaging was right out the gate was that they were the first like major pool to come out and say the way blocks are constructed and produced is not optimal for the Bitcoin network from a decentralization perspective. And they've stuck to that narrative, although others have dominated the conversation more. It's interesting to see, yeah, especially this past week, and we talked about it on the Blockspace Bytes stream last week, but like, yeah, maybe there's a lot more incentive and narrative firepower behind this. So Ocean at 10% doesn't seem that crazy, Will.
Doesn't seem too crazy to me at all. I think they're probably going to have to do some more marketing outside the Western Hemisphere to get it there.
Need ASIC help? Check out Bitamine, one of Bitmain's certified repair shops located in Washington State with satellite offices in Colorado, Oklahoma, and Texas. PSUs, hashboards, immersion setups, in and out of warranty repair, Bitamine has you covered. Want to train your technicians? Bring Bitamine to your site for hands-on training in the art of ASIC repair, complete with Bitmain AMTC certification. Contact Bitamine today at dan@vmasic.com. Again, that's dan@vmasic.com. When you think of ASIC repair, think Bitamine.
Okay, let's pull up his piece from Rest of World, which is an investigative reporting piece about the TSMC build-out of its huge new chip fab outside Phoenix, Arizona. I'm going to read a line from it. But the gist of the story before we dive into it is, why is this chip fab taking so long to get off the ground? Why are they delaying production? And what does the inside life of an employee at TSMC in Arizona look like? So let's take a quick read from here. Quote, just like in Taiwan, language barriers contribute to tension in Phoenix. Bruce said his department manager, who had come from Taiwan, spoke poor English. So instead of communicating with Bruce directly, he'd channel feedback or instructions through a Taiwanese colleague. One U.S. engineer said managers trusted Taiwanese workers with important tasks, starving the Americans of hands-on experience. One ex-employee later joked that the biggest skills he learned at TSMC was making PowerPoint slides. Disgruntled Americans flocked to post complaints to workplace review website Glassdoor, reporting long work hours, high stress, unrealistic deadlines, and Asian culture, quote unquote. TSMC currently has a rating of 3.2 out of 5 stars on the site. American chipmakers Intel and Texas Instruments, by comparison, have a 4.1 rating. The poor Glassdoor rating made it more difficult for TSMC to hire experienced American workers, a former TSMC manager told Rest of World. Another former employee said he convinced 6 engineer friends to turn down offers from TSMC. So this goes back into what we were just talking about with Jack Dorsey. Like, what does it look like to be able to get all the parts developed in North America or certainly the United States? Turns out it's really freaking hard. There's a lot of different cultural aspects to building something like this. And I think it's underthought and underappreciated how hard it is to get two groups of very different people to work together well on what is a monolithic engineering project like chips. And this is why I'm bearish on a new ASIC provider coming out. It's going to be really hard. You know, it's not going to be a cakewalk to get this off the ground.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting here is that the article does not focus on like really any like planning hangups. It doesn't talk about like actual like build out flubs or maybe even deals with the government. It actually the problems originate at the human level, which is something kind of surreal to be talking about when we're talking about the dominant and defining chip maker of our age. This is the future of tech, and it's and one of their flagship sites in the United States is hamstrung by human challenge. So this is a really, really good article. If you're listening to this, I'd recommend you go and read this article. It's TSMC's Debacle in the American Desert by Rest of World is the outlet publishing it. And this is also kind of a, this is also a pretty big scoop, Will. Like, they had to dig deep and break and pierce through a lot of like veiled nature, a lot of like veiled NDAs and like, culture, which is very hard to get like an actual story out of. So this is a very deep dive story into one of, I think, the like most important economic and national security stories of the year, and maybe the decade, actually, I think, is the onshoring of foundries and chip makers to the U.S.
I mean, there's tens of billions of dollars in government funding at stake, and then tens of billions of dollars from TSMC investing into this. And then, of course, like the geopolitical concerns for our small corner of the Bitcoin mining industry, which makes about $12 billion a year in revenue. We're kind of like pennies on the table in this giant game of poker. So it doesn't matter too much, but I think we can walk away from this saying it takes a really long time to get these very complex computer systems off the ground, these hardware systems. So it's going to continue to be the case for Bitcoin, even though we'd love to see a more decentralized way of making hardware. It's going to take quite a while. In terms of scoop, yeah, big scoop. I think they said to talk to 20 former employees. Pretty hard to get this kind of information, especially at these sort of companies. Very hard to get into these foundries. So it's cool to see reporting with the inside lens into something like this. A lot of the stuff in there actually didn't surprise me. Just learning about like the different work cultures. I think Americans are not well known in Asia for their work ethic. But then I think in Europe, Americans are well known for their work ethic. So it's kind of like a whole thing there, right? Just kind of depends on where you live and grew up, I suppose. But that's my last thoughts on it. Anything else before we close?
Yeah. You know, you thought 2021, the China mining ban was the end of like having to navigate the weird East and West conversation about Bitcoin. But no, we are still talking about it. In fact, I feel like we're talking about it more than ever this week with TSMC and pool block template production. Like, man, it's more important than ever to be cross-domain and cross-continent these days.
When mining pod in Chinese, hopefully this year. Okay, we'll close out from there. If you enjoyed the show, you'll enjoy our other shows, The Gwirt Show, which is all things crypto, Bitcoin, crossover conversations with crypto's brightest lights. Go check out that podcast. And then Bitcoin Season 2 with Charlie Spears. He talks with everyone coming up in the new Bitcoin class about what's being built on chain, from inscriptions to opcodes and much more. You can find both those shows on the blockspace.media website. Just type that into your browser or click below in the show notes, blockspace.media. Also have our newsletter, films, and much more on that website. So go and check it out. Charlie, I'll see you in Slack, I suppose. Talk later.
See you on the internet, everybody.